Well, yesterday the world was treated to the very first images of the hospital ship, the Centaur, sunk in southeast Queensland waters during World War II by the Japanese. Now, the images of the ship showed it lying on its side on the ocean floor and its distinctive markings identifying it positively as that of the Centaur, the boat that David Mearns has been charged to find by the state and federal governments. David Mearns is with me now. David, good morning. Those first photos taken at nearly 3 a.m. yesterday morning, I understand that initially the cameras that you were using focused on something entirely different that gave you a bit of pause to think if you were on the right track or not. Is that right?
That's right. We were closing in on a target. In the ROV sonar, a very large target, which we all expected to be the Centaur. And just before we reached it, we saw, instead of our shipwreck, a very, very large rock, outcropping rocks. And for a moment, I dreaded the worst. But fortunately, that moment didn't last too long.
Oh, I'm very pleased for you.
Shortly after that, we just turned the... just moved the ROV a little bit over, and there was the shipwreck.
How did you feel when those first images came up of the Centaur and such clear markings, such as the red cross emblazoned on the side and the green ring of paint that runs around the ship on its side as well? What was that like for you and the crew on board when you had those positive identifying features marked out and clearly visible?
Well, it was one of enormous relief. This is the culmination of a year of very hard work of everybody involved in this project, and so we were delighted to see the ship and to see the markings, you know, so clear. So identification was a very, very simple matter, and since that first dive, we've had another 6-hour dive, and in addition to seeing all those markings again. And even more clearer detail, we have found the bell of Centaur on its bow, and
wow.
The name could be read.
Wow, that's amazing. Is it so unusual for these features and these markings to be so well preserved on vessels like this when they've been sunk?
Not really. I expected to see what we did see in the end. The unusual thing is that the Centaur is a hospital ship, had very, very clear markings. She was marked that way, obviously, to identify her as a hospital ship, so she wasn't attacked by anybody. And, you know, she had a very bright coloration. She's a white hull with a 4-foot green band painted all around her circumference, only interspersed by six large red crosses, three on the port side and three on the starboard side, and two big... large number 47s painted on her bow. So ships are generally not marked that way, and that's why, you know, she was so easy to identify. And I expected, you know, the paint work to be obviously discolored due to rust and corrosion and what happens to a shipwreck after 66 years on the seabed, you know, the vessel is slowly corroding away. That's what happens to the shipwrecks.
Mm.
But still, I've seen many shipwrecks of this era, this vintage, and you can still see the remnants of original paintwork.
You've been involved in many, many relocations of other vessels that have been lost at sea. When you first see the images come up of these vessels, once you locate them, like you did yesterday morning in the early hours of the morning, does it ever get any less emotional for you?
No, when you put so much into a project and you have the hopes of so many people riding on your shoulders, the stakes are very, very high. And, you know, to be successful is just enormously, it's a great relief. And knowing that you're fulfilling all these people's wishes, and so now it doesn't get any less. In one sense, it's more intense for me each time because I understand and appreciate how privileged I am to be doing this on behalf of so many people.
Now, I know the reaction from both the survivors of the Centaur and their relatives and families of those people lost on board has been, you know, nothing short of amazing, very high emotions running with people yesterday. How much longer do you intend to spend collecting images of the Centaur?
Well, we've just reached the seabed, and our ROV is about probably 50 metres from the wreck. So as soon as I put down this telephone, we're going to get back to the job of filming her. We'll be doing that all day today, or in a dive that is many hours. And then later tonight, we may be laying the memorial plaque. So it all depends on how well things go. This is these are relatively technologically complex operations, and you know, we've had a couple of niggling problems that have stolen some time to us. Right now, the weather is absolutely ideal, as flat a sea as you can get out here. Just a gentle swell, and the currents are cooperating, which is quite amazing. So we're going to make hay while the sun shines and take the best images possible.
You mentioned a couple of niggling problems there. What have you been experiencing?
Oh, the sort of typical things that you have with putting a device on the seabed that is virtually, you know, computers and high voltage electricity and all sorts of technological gizmos, and you're putting it at a depth of 2,000 meters under great pressure. So, you know, you have leaks, you have O-rings that fell, and hydraulic failures. These are the sort of normal things that you experience in working in this type of depth. And, you know, we shook a lot of those out on the second dive, and they've been sorted. So right now everything is operating smoothly.
Now, still yet to happen is the laying of the memorial plaque that you've been charged to lay in proximity to the Centaur. I know that when I spoke with you last week ahead of you going out to sea, that you were concerned that that plaque, being quite heavy, could end up, you know, being lost in the sludge of the ocean bed there. What's your thinking on that now? How are you hoping to honour the victims lost on the Centaur with that plaque? How will you attach it to the vessel?
Yes, can you hold just a second? I need to address the ROV. Hold right there on this object. I'll be with you in about a minute. We've just come on the first piece of wreckage on this dive. That's why I've stopped. It's a difficult situation with regards to the plaque. Because we've tested laying a similar size piece of metal on the seabed and found that it sunk very deeply. The sediments down here are extremely soft. They're very, very sticky. Once they get onto something, this soft, sticky clay mud actually adheres to any object. So you only have one chance at doing this. If you get it wrong, if, for instance, we laid it the wrong way, you know, we'd have to bring the plaque up to clean it off. There's no way you can do that on the seabed. And on the basis of that test, I think that if we lay the plaque on the seabed, the memorial will be buried. At least half of it will be buried. And the part that will be buried will be the words of commemoration from the members of the Centaur Association to the loved ones who are lost. And I don't want to do that. And so we're putting in an application on behalf of the Centaur Association to the government agency responsible for these things, requesting a special permit to lay the plaque on the wreck in a way that is least disturbing to it. And I think people have to remember this is a 29-pound bronze plaque that we're laying on a 3,000-ton shipwreck. So you know, in terms of, I think we're talking more here about principle rather than actual damage to this shipwreck. But, you know, we respect those principles and we intend to, you know, follow the rules as we can. And hopefully the people who review this permit will take in consideration what we're doing out here, how much it would mean to not just the Centaur Association, but to everybody who's been affected by our video and footage, to see that photograph of this bronze plaque laid on the wreck and in proximity, in keeping with their wishes, which is just to have a a permanent and visibly accessible memorial on the shipwreck.
Well, let's hope that...
What's very important for people to understand is that this is virtually the headstone for this gravesite.
Yes.
It has the names of all 268 men and women who perished on board. And that's why it's very important to the Centro Association that this placing is given, you know, a full consideration by the government agency.
Well, let's hope that gets to happen. David Mearns, I'll let you go. I know you're keen to get on with your work there and, as you said, make hay while the sun shines. So best of luck with the continued operation. And thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you. Bye now.
But I've got Erica Costigan on the phone. Erica is a member of the Caloundra RSL Centaur Committee. And Erica, very good morning to you.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Remind us, first of all, of your connection to the Centaur, Erica, if you would.
Well, John, 16 years ago, in 1993, Caloundra arranged for a Centaur committee here to arrange for the 50th anniversary commemorations. And both Brian and I have been on that committee ever since. I have had the very rewarding task of being the public relations officer for that group. So as well as helping with the organising of the 50th and later the 60th anniversary ceremonies, we've had some wonderful years getting to know a lot of the survivors. We have met at least 7 survivors and getting to know a lot of the other Centaur families through the memorial plaques which we have in Centaur Park, and there's contact with the Centaur families that way and different stories. It's been a very rewarding, busy but very rewarding task.
When did you first get to see the video footage, Erica?
Yesterday morning at about just after 8 o'clock.
Was that on TV or did you get to...
Computer, yes.
On the computer?
Yes.
So in your situation you were sent an email file or something from David, were you?
No, but we were able to get it on, I think it was Courier Mail, the Courier Mail site.
Oh, right,
there
okay.
There were 2 shots, the one of the Red Cross, which is the definitive proof, and another one of the bow. You could see a little bit of the bow rail, etc.
It was great. They're really good, yes. Good quality photos too.
Yes, very... very exciting. I mean, right from the start, when everything was spoken about the search being organised, we were all very definite that, A, we wanted the wreck found after all this time. It's been just too long to wait for hundreds of Australian families. B, we wanted to have it positively identified. And C, from then on, everybody wanted the wreck untouched and totally protected. Well, the wreck was found on the 20th of December. Yesterday, it was absolutely positively identified with the Red Cross. I mean, it's amazing that it even looked as red as it did. I thought perhaps it might be pale pink. David said the paint would still be there or it'd still be definable. Well, it certainly was. So with that, plus a little bit of the number 47, you could see a little bit of that, plus what David calls the absolute... finger footprint, as he calls it, of the badge that's on the bow. You can just see that and a little shape of the star on that, and it's like a fingerprint which identifies it, so that's positively identified. Now all we have to do is make sure that the protection which has been given to it already is definitely continued, and considering that it's 2 kilometres under the ocean, I think that will be, protection enough for the large majority of inquiring souls. They just won't be able to get there.
I'm sure.
So it's got its own built-in protection.
Now, the next stage is going to be a service above, a shipboard service on board a vessel above,
yes,
where the Centaur lies,
yes,
and also a church service in Brisbane, I gather.
Yes. The shipboard ceremony will be directly over the site, and that's for families. And there will also be a land-based national memorial service in Brisbane at a venue not yet decided upon, but there usually is a ceremony every year in Brisbane at one of the cathedral sites. So considering the large number that I think will probably wish to attend, it will need to be a very large venue. But that's for also for families. There may be some people who are unable to go to see or don't wish to go to the site but just wish to be involved otherwise. For those families, national and state dignitaries and some politicians, organisations and the general public. But the dates for both of those are unknown yet because numbers have to come in. And our task at the present time is to get the message out to the public, to families who had a victim or perhaps a survivor who has since passed away. And we've got to remember those 64 families. It's not just those that went down. These other families lived through 66 years of hell and nightmares and thoughts and dreams and adjustments of all other kinds. So it's for all of those. So all of those have the opportunity of choosing the land-based ceremony or the site, over the site. And shortly, next week or so, there'll be a 1-300 number available whereby people can contact indicate their interest in either one or the other, and you know more or less the name of the person to whom they are related.
And of course, it finally gives closure to all these families too.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been a very, very long time to literally hundreds of Australian families affected. And as I say, we've got to remember the survivor families as well.
Tell me, from the point of view of a plaque is going to be, put down there somehow. David Mearns was on the news this morning talking about the ocean bottom there. It's very silty, very soft mud. If you put a plaque on the ocean floor, it would probably just settle down into the mud and disappear.
Well, I think it would. The plaque, being a metal base thing, would be quite heavy, and it wouldn't take very much movement of the ocean, even though the ship is in like a deep little canyon area, even where it is. It wouldn't take very much movement of the seabed for that to be completely invisible or completely submerged. I don't know how they're going to handle it because with the protection zone that has been placed around it immediately, I understand the cameras can't go any closer than a metre. I hope that's correct, but I did see or read that somewhere that nothing is allowed to touch it. Now, whether that can be that information can be modified a little just for the sake of the plaque but nothing else, I don't know. But you would think that it would need to be attached somehow.
I was thinking of magnets.
Well, that's a thought. I mean, they're saying nothing is allowed to touch the metal, but there must be some way that it can be done and secured to a certain extent. I mean, if they can do the things they can do on the spaceships and things millions of miles away, surely they can have some arrangement whereby that can stay in place.
You know, the interesting thing though, Erica, we know more about space than we know about this planet's ocean floor. I think only 5% of this ocean's the world's ocean floors have actually been mapped thoroughly. So we don't know a great deal about what's down there, but at least we know what's down there now.
Yes. I mean, I feel quite sorry that there wasn't, that the wait was so long for so many, that there wasn't an attempt to find it earlier. But then again, now that we now know that it's 2 kilometres deep, and that's a long way down, the necessary equipment wouldn't have been available until recent years. But however, it's found now and it is identified. So Caloundra's history, Caloundra's claim to the sightings, and we had 3 sightings from here locally. Caloundra's claim to our very special piece of wartime history has been justified, and Queensland history is set straight, and it was Queensland Maritime's worst tragedy. So, a lot of that history is going to be set straight now. So
indeed.
It's very, very important and very special, very humbling, I think.
Erica, many thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, John.